It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
On your radio and streaming on your phone with the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. We're live from training camp, sponsored by AdCare on 800 alcohol.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub, coming to you from Patriots training camp. It was day number three, the first padded practice.
They really only went at it hard for an hour, and then it was just kind of a puff piece practice, I guess, for lack of a better term. Camp Cupcake is what Scott Zolak is calling it, but from what we hear, tomorrow's going to be a longer day. But I don't really mind it overall, Chris. Like, you know, last year I found it odd and, like, somewhat, I don't know, gross when it got to the point where it felt like it was, you know, chill Belichick, no, comma, days off. Guys, he's taking them, going to play cornhole over at Fenway.
Yeah.
They're watching old video of old-timey football and having old-timey football snacks, hot dogs, and heavy beers. It's like, what the hell is going on here? It's a lot of days off for the veterans. Well, it ultimately worked in their favor.
Definitely.
They end up winning the Super Bowl. It did look wonky at times, and it was obviously a tough start in that first month. But this time around, and the more I've thought about it, and especially how it worked out for them last year, like, fine. For vets like Brady, the McCourties, Kyle Van Noy, you know, anyone that's been here for this run, especially over the last four or five seasons, you've played so much extra football than everybody else in the NFL, then fine, take some days off and let the younger guys compete. I actually don't mind the practice this time.
Yeah, I think Bill has adapted to sort of what the new rules are in terms of what you can. I mean, you just can't, like, you can't even do two. It's not a choice for Bill. Like,
yeah.
Two-a-days are not an option. You cannot do them. They are prohibited by the CBA in terms of two-a-days and pads. It's not, you can have two practices, but then one has to be a walkthrough. So they could probably get more done in a film session. So he's sort of adjusted to this, and you brought up the great point about all the extra football that they've played over the years, being in the playoffs and going to the AFC Championship game and short off seasons and all that stuff. And, you know, a lot of positions, they have veteran guys. You know, veteran guys, you have to preserve their bodies, preserve their legs for the long haul. I mean, you're not winning anything in July. I think it's one of the advantages the Patriots have in that they have so much continuity that they're not like a lot of teams that really need training camp to put their program in place. You know, the Patriots program is in place. It's just a matter of ramping up and fine-tuning, and, you know, hopefully the team peaks when it needs to peak.
By the way, this hour of Gasper Murray from Patriots training camp brought to you by Bernardi Auto Group, our friends at Bernardi Auto Group. Okay, so a lot of talk has been made about the depth on this year's team. Our pal Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal, has said on the air and in his columns, this is as deep a Patriots team since 2014, and others that cover the team have said this is very deep, especially defensively.
Sure.
You disagree?
Well, I mean, I disagree to a point. What I would say is I think the depth is maybe being a little overplayed, in my opinion. I think there are certain positions where they are really deep, like cornerback and linebacker, but I think sometimes you can sort of conflate having a lot of options and a lot of competition with automatic depth. And so when I look at positions like wide receiver, tight end, and tackle, I'm not sure. I don't look at them and think, oh, they're really deep in terms of there's established talent. I think there's a lot of bodies here, and we'll find out who can play and who can't. And so we're talking about those positions on the offensive side of the ball, wide receiver, offensive tackle, tight end. I don't really see the depth. And even a position like running back, I think that the depth might be a little bit deceiving. and that you do have talent there. There are established guys. So you would say, yes, this is a deep position. But on the other hand, it could become a position of need pretty quickly based on guys' past histories. You know, Sony Michel, what's the situation with his knee injury? Rex Burkhead is not a guy that's been able to last. When he was with the Bengals loved him. But one of the things they said is every time we put him in sort of a feature role, he gets hurt.
Well, since he's been here, you look up every week or two, and it's like, oh, well, look who's out again. It's Burkhead. He's been nicked up like every single time.
You know, a guy like James White, who is tremendous, tremendous, they have to keep him on a pitch count because he has a slighter frame. We'll see what Damian Harris can do. He's a rookie. And then Brandon Bolden, he's been here before. He's solid. But, you know, he's a special teams guy. So, you know, I don't think you're going to be playing a wide receiver at running back this year. And that's great. But I also don't look at it and think, oh, wow, like it's the 72 Dolphins back here with Larry Zonka, Jim Kick, and Mercury Morris. Like, who are you going to hand the ball to? So that's my own point. You know, I think they have a lot of competition, and that's a good thing, and that's what you want in a camp. But competition doesn't automatically translate to discernible depth that's going to help you throughout the course of a season. And sometimes when you have a lot of options at a position, what that really means is you don't have a lot of good options. Now, hopefully that's not the case for positions like wide receiver and tight end, but it's a possibility. So I can't go and declare at this point that, oh, yeah, you know, they're super deep at these positions.
With Gronk retiring, and I think he stays retired. I mean, I know that he has up until week 13 to maybe make a comeback, but I just, with as many back surgeries as that guy has undergone since his collegiate career, like,
yeah.
He's one hit away from using a ramp to get into his house. Like, walk away, dude, like for your health. But do you think that they kind of de-emphasize that position in terms of pass catching? I know that people have been hot. Matt LaCosse, who's looked okay. But, you know, that's one area where I agree with you. Like, behind him, it's what? So do you think that they kind of ultimately de-emphasize that? Because it felt like they did last year anyway when he became Robert James Gronkowski, and he wasn't Gronk until the playoffs. Is it just going to be more about run blocking than more than anything else?
It could be, but I mean, how can you de-emphasize it if you're not sure what you have at receiver outside of Edelman? Like, I would even say Philip Dorsett, and I thought he played very well in the playoffs last year. I did. But when I look at him, I don't look at him and say, this is a guy that's ready to be a number two wide receiver. I mean, if you go back and look at his stats last year, I think he averaged 9 yards a reception. So I don't look at this and say, like, okay, you know, it's sort of the same thing with Hogan last year, right? So Hogan was, like, great as a number three. Now, all of a sudden, Amendola is gone, and Edelman is suspended. Now he has to be a number one. Can he do it? No. And so I sort of feel the same way about Dorsett in terms of if you bump him up, you know, from a three to a two, is he a guy that can go out there and fill that role? I don't know that for certain, and I'm not as confident, I think, as some others in that. Yeah, last year, 32 receptions, 290 yards, 9.1 yards per reception. I mean, that's not going to get it done as the number two. And then you have a rookie in N'Keal Harris. So, you know, the Patriots will figure it out. They always figure it out. But last year, part of figuring it out was not saying, look at all the depth we have in training camp. This is going to work. It was like, oh, my God, we need another receiver. Josh Gordon's available. Yeah, so maybe it's another Josh Gordon bailout. I don't know.
I'm glad you just mentioned him, because earlier in the week when Felger was in, I hadn't even thought about this. So what do you think's going on with him? Because all of a sudden we've heard nothing. And in Belichick's first press conference when camp was opening, he was kind of quick and just said, you'll have to ask the league about
that. Yeah, it's a league issue.
So, you know, around OTAs, you get that little video that Brady puts up on his Instagram where he's throwing a Josh Gordon in the backyard in Brookline. During the spring, Josh Gordon had been pretty active on his own Instagram account, but no posts since April. Haven't really heard anything since that post from Brady, which I think was the beginning of June. So it's like been a month here. We've had nothing. And Belichick says, go ask the league about it. Do you think something might have happened? I know we're all just speculating.
Yeah, sure.
All of a sudden, it's just like you hear nothing about Josh Gordon. You still think that they're even counting on him to come back at this point?
I don't know. It doesn't feel like it. I mean, it feels like at this point that it's almost like gravy, which is sort of strange because I felt before that they were, you were sort of hearing whispers that they were expecting to have him back and fairly early in the season. And now it seems like maybe that's changed, or maybe it's just typical, you know, sort of Belichickian, you know, brevity in the answers and not wanting to be revealing. I don't know. I mean, but it is a little strange, and you wonder how much they're factoring him in to this whole thing. I mean, that's my biggest thing with that. The guy's an incredible talent, and he's actually a pretty nice guy from my dealings with him, and he's very bright. But I just don't think you can rely on him, and he's proven that throughout the course of his career. Now, it worked out for them last year. They didn't have him. And it worked out, but literally it gets forgotten because they won the championship. But His suspension, like, that all happened at the worst possible time.
It was after the Pittsburgh loss.
The worst possible time. Like, last two games of the season, got to get ready for the playoffs. This guy has become such a huge part of your offense. He's averaging 20 yards a catch, and now he's not available.
Yeah, no, it does feel like they've gone from, oh, he's going to be back, and it's all a matter of time, and they'll figure it out with the league, to, like, nothing. So,
yeah.
I don't think you can count on him at this point. And, you know, you wish him the best, but I think that at this point they shouldn't, considering his history. Something else that had your Spidey sense, your reporter Spidey sense, go off today is that for the third day of camp, again, this is like the first real practice, no Michael Bennett.
Yeah.
And Nick Caserio, who we'll get to, had a press conference today, mentioned him, saying it's, you know, been a pleasure to work with him, but we hear nothing. It's just been he's been absent for personal reasons. Well,
yeah.
It was the same thing for David Andrews, but David Andrews is back today. What do you think's going on there? What's your spider sense telling you?
No, it's telling me that there's a possibility something's going on here in terms of maybe he's reconsidering playing football at this stage of his career, or they're trying to work something out with him in terms of acclimating him to this culture and putting him in a position where he's comfortable, and maybe it doesn't sort of wear on him. Maybe it's like a Roman Pfeiffer thing. It just sort of feels like there's something beyond his whole conditioning or an injury that maybe is contributing to this situation. Just the words they're using, it's just so vague. And just to sort of throw that bouquet out there, oh, you know, it's been really great working with him. It almost sort of, are you trying to convince him, you know, we'll work with you, it's great? Or the way you're saying it is an almost past tense, like we've enjoyed our time with him, but we're not sure, like, it's going to go for. I mean, that would be a huge loss for them. This is pure speculation. I could be way off base, but it's odd. I'm finding it to be odd. And normally, again, if it's just strictly, hey, you know, this guy showed up to camp out of shape and we don't want to say that, so it's personal reasons and we're going to work him out, I feel like by now somebody, you know, Zoe or somebody would have said something or would have seen him running out here on the conditioning field that's, you know, hard for the fans to see, sort of blocked by this giant building that's right in front of us. But if you have the right view, you can see guys on that conditioning field, and you'll see that. And we haven't seen that. You see a guy come out after practice, before practice. No one has seen him do any sort of conditioning stuff. So it leads me to believe that it's not about conditioning or physical ability. There's something else going on.
Oh, that's a long way of saying it. You wouldn't be shocked if he showed up and was like, oh, the hell with this, I'm retiring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wouldn't either. And so that is where, when you say, you know, maybe the talk of depth has been overrated, I'm with you, because if Bennett decides to retire or there's something going on there, well, just like that, the defensive line takes a massive hit.
Yeah, now it's like, okay, do you trust, you know, Derek Rivers or Trent Harris or, you know, any of these guys? And so I think they're really deep at certain positions, key positions, positions on defense that you want to be deep at, linebacker and cornerback. But overall, the depth of the roster, to me, I just think it's been a little bit overplayed, and it's a little unproven at this point.
Nick Caserio, director of player personnel, spoke today. Kind of rare for him, considering you only hear from him after the NFL draft, but a lot has been surrounding him and this team and the Houston Texans in this offseason. We're going to touch on that press conference coming up. And also, if you've been worried about some of the depth on this team this year, specifically at wide receiver, and that's understandable because it's Julian Edelman and Philip Dorsett and a lot of question marks. At least you're not as bad as one other team so far as training camp has started. We'll touch on that as well. Nick Caserio, what's going on with the New York Giants and their wide receiver situation. So you can at least, from in terms of a sports schadenfreude aspect, sit back and cackle about that. We'll get to that. And your phone calls at 617-779-0985. This is Gasper Murray live from Patriots training camp here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. 98.5 The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub is live from training camp. Sponsored by AdCare. 1-800-ALCOHOL. On your home of the Pats. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I'd say I'm pretty honored and privileged to be in the position I'm in, to work for the organization. I'm thankful for the opportunity that I have each day to come to work and come into this building. So we've got a lot of great people. I'm fortunate and honored to work with Bill on a day-to-day basis and a lot of other people in this building. My job is really just to serve the people that are in this building. And my focus is in trying to do the best that I can every day and be the best version of myself for this team and this organization. And that's what the focus is.
Nick, blink twice if you need help. Gasper Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub. It's Gasper Murray coming to you from Patriots training camp. That's director of player personnel, Nick Caserio, speaking earlier today. kind of unexpected, this press conference, because, correct me if I'm wrong here, Chris, you really only hear from Nick Caserio like a day or two after the draft. I feel like it's the Saturday of the draft. Like, he'll do like an impromptu press conference just to talk about some of the picks so far. But this, I don't know. Why do you think that they put him out there, considering everything that's been surrounding him this offseason?
It's hard because, you know, he's facing you as a media member. You can only see his forehead. What you can't see on the back of his head is the red sniper dot that's on the back right there as he's giving the press conference. So he knows one wrong word, and that's it. You're done. No. It was interesting to me they made him available. I think they kind of want to just squash the whole offseason thing with the Texans. Bill seemed a little annoyed about having to answer questions about it, so you throw Caserio out there to answer the questions. And I think it also has the dual purpose there of making Nick a little more front and center, and that's something where you give him the opportunity to be in front of the media, which is something that he's going to have to do more and more of when he runs his own show someday, whether that's here after Belichick retires or if it's with the Houston Texans, I should say, next year. So I think that's, you know, it's actually kind of a good thing. It's letting him out from under Belichick's thumb a little bit, because we don't get to talk to these assistants, whether it's football operations guys or assistant coaches, a lot. And so they're giving Nick, you know, some autonomy there, but they're also saying, hey, clean up your mess.
Yeah, but now that because I was only reading the quotes and I heard some of it driving in listening to Ryan Johnson and Ted Johnson, but I don't know, the more I hear it, like the honored and privileged to be with the Patriots. It's like a hostage video. Surprise. And I also denounce the United States run by these capitalist American pigs. Like, okay, like, we get it. Like, yeah. But I don't know. Again, the thing that stood out to you, because you, of course, he's not going to say anything. He's here. Contractually, he's obligated. But, I mean, it does still sound like a guy who's going to be out. You know, the Texans are holding that spot for next year. They haven't filled the GM spot. Like, he's going to go. It's just kind of, you got to see through this year and adios.
I mean, it's not a fait accompli, because I've been told that, you know, he certainly would consider resigning here. And let's see what happens in Houston. Maybe Houston has a bad year, or, you know, Bill O'Brien doesn't get along with Cal McNair, who's the son now, who's been put in place after Bob McNair passed away. So who knows? Things could change, but it certainly seems like the Texans think that he'll be available and that they can nab him next year. And he's expressed interest in the job each of the last 2 years. The Texans have expressed interest in him. I know that he felt like he should have been able to interview for the job. The Patriots felt otherwise based on his contract and blocked him from it, but he wanted to at least interview for it. And the one answer that to me was the most telling in regards to Nick's long-term situation and long-term goals, Jim, was somebody asked him whether, I think it was Karen Grieg, you know, the Herald, asked him whether he wants to, you know, basically have full autonomy someday and be a GM and run his own show. And he kind of dodged it, and he sort of deflected and started talking about how he wants to be a good dad and all the family stuff, which is important. But it was a complete non-answer. And to me, the idea is, yes, he would like to run his own show someday, and he just doesn't want to say that.
Again, that's where you see the red dot all of a sudden show up on his chest. What's on your chest there, Nick?
There's a second dot. There's the one in the back, and then there's the one in the chest.
But, you know, that he also would have been, you know, part of the brain drain if he were to leave. And that's one of the other things going into this season that just feels so odd. Like, okay, like year in, year out, and Belichick was asked about this on day one, you know, his camp was opening, like, hey, you've lost a lot. And he was saying, well, you know, that's part of the year in, year out of the NFL. There's a lot of upheaval. But this, like, this was,
no, this is
this
not
felt like
normal.
A mass exodus is what it felt like.
Yeah, no, this is not normal. And like, look, again, you know, Bill's going to downplay it because that's what he does. But, no, this was different. This is a little bit different when you have all the, you lose your defensive coordinator here, you lost the character coach, you lost your defensive line coach.
Who took the same gig with Kansas City.
Yeah, no, I think there were family reasons involved there, but also, you know, I think some of these guys sometimes, you know, this is the way with Brian Daboll, who was here, you know, a couple of stints. He was wide receivers coach, and then he left with Mangini, and then he was back here as tight ends coach, and then he went to Alabama, and now I think he's the OC with the Bills. But they sort of get a sense of whether they're Bill's preferred choice to take the next step or not. And if they're not, it's like, okay, you know, if you're Chad O'Shea, like Chad O'Shea, really, as wide receivers coach, I think was sort of victimized by Josh McDaniels' reversal last year with that Colts job. You know, I think if he leaves, then Chad's in a position to ascend to offensive coordinator. Now, all of a sudden, McDaniels is still here on like a 5-year contract, making, you know, $20 million over the course of the contract. Where's Chad O'Shea going to go? There's nowhere for him to go. So Flores took some people with him, and then there was a Greg Schiano situation. He was going to come in here and be the defensive coordinator, but then under mysterious family circumstances, he had to back away from the job. So it's just kind of strange. And when you look at it, just overall, regardless of who's gone, let's talk about who's left. Just to me, it's a really inexperienced staff. And that could put more of a workload on Bill Belichick this year, you know, whether Gerard Mayo is calling the plays or not. I mean, Gerard's fantastic. Super smart guy, great at relating to people, knows football inside and out, but he's never been a coach. And there's a learning curve in any job, so there'll be a learning curve for him there. So how much of Bill's time now is sort of babysitting his inexperienced defensive staff? And then on the offensive side, Joe Judge is the special teams coach slash wide receivers coach. That's why, like, Troy Brown is out here.
Yeah, that one is one that, to me, that bugs me. It's like, okay, you now have double on your plate. You're the special teams coach and the wide receivers coach. Like, I feel like, I don't know, that's something that not would trip them up, but could be potentially problematic. What about the nepotism factor? Does that bug you at all? Like, Bill's sons of friends, like Mike Lombardi, like that. Does that irk you?
I mean, I think Steven Belichick's a really good coach, so I think he's kind of earned his stripes at this point. I know those guys.
He's been around long enough.
Yeah, they respect him. So as long as the guy can coach, you know, I don't mind giving your kid a leg up. I would honestly, I honestly have more of a problem with, you know, like the Brett Bielemas of the world. And I'm not saying the guy's not a good coach, but I just sort of feel like he licked boots, so now he's here. And it's like now he's the defensive line coach. He was like an assistant kind of last year. And I don't know. I mean, he was a solid, you know, college coach at Wisconsin. It didn't go the way he wanted at Arkansas. But he doesn't really have a lot of experience. And he's one of your higher ranking defensive coaches. So that's one where I'm kind of like, I don't know about this. You know, the certified FOB friend of Belichick factor is for me is more than the kids. And sort of the like, hey, this ex lacrosse player, I really admired him. He's great. You know, and look, who knows? Maybe Mike Pellegrino, who is the cornerbacks coach now, took over for Josh Boyer. Look, there was a time when we ridiculed Josh Boyer from, you know, South Dakota School of Mines and Technology.
Right.
So he got ridiculed and derided as well. Maybe Pellegrino is a great cornerbacks coach, but he's inexperienced overall as a coach. And then he doesn't have the traditional sort of background. So sometimes it seems like, you know, with some of the coaching staff stuff, you look at it and you're saying, is Bill just going with people that he trusts, or is he going with, like, for example, when Dom Capers was here, I remember Rodney Harrison saying, you know, hey, you know, basically Dom wasn't allowed to do any of his stuff, you know, and it's like, okay, Dom Capers, if you don't want to run his blitz stuff, I get it, but he was still a really good secondary coach. So there are veteran coaches from different systems you could bring in here, but it's like you want to groom and mold every coach, so you end up with the lacrosse guy as your cornerbacks coach.
Yeah, Dom Capers, going way back, but one of my worst takes ever, Chris, was the Patriots hired the wrong guy. It should have been Dom Capers over Bill Belichick.
Ooh,
back
wow.
In 2000.
I can't believe you're even admitting.
Oh, yeah,
I've had some doozies.
Yeah,
it's really one of my worst takes ever was mocking the signing of Danny Woodhead.
Oh, I didn't like that either at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
boy,
I
could have been any more wrong. That
was
guy was nailed.
A camp darling of the New York Jets. He only really knew because of the Hard Knocks thing. Yeah, oh no, that Dom Capers thing. I was incensed because he did such a good job with the Carolina Panthers when they first came into the league. Almost got to the Super Bowl there in 96. Like, no, that's the guy, not Belichick. Oof, got that one wrong. That's right up there with cut this Adam Vinatieri after he missed a big kick in 99.
But that's pure emotion, though. I know you as a fan, and like that was just pure emotion. You know, you have the, you know, get the F off my team thing.
I'm quick with that.
You
I mentioned, you know, if you're concerned about wide receiver depth or just the wide receiver position in general outside of Julian Edelman and Philip Dorsett in this team this year, I don't blame you. But it can always be worse. Like right down 95 in New York with the Giants. Holy crap. Their first week of camp, oh my God, even including now Golden Tate, who I wanted the Patriots to sign in free agency. So here's the latest. So here's what's happened so far this week at wide receiver for the New York Giants. Sterling Shepard fractured his thumb. It's going to keep him out the entire preseason. Corey Coleman tore his ACL. He's done for the year. Now, Golden Tate suspended 4 games for violating the league's PED policy. He was set to be, obviously, the team's veteran receiving presence. This is their big free agent signing this year.
Replacement for Odell Beckham Jr., basically.
And so now he's popped for PEDs for 4 games. He'll obviously appeal. So, you know me, sports schadenfreude, enjoying the pain of others. It can always be worse. It's worse for the Giants. Sit back and laugh and enjoy that one. Tate, though, that one's a little bit surprising. And you were just reading what?
Yeah.
He's trying to. What's the excuse he's trying
he's
to
saying,
use?
He's saying it has to do with a treatment he underwent, like fertility treatment, you know.
Isn't that the Manny Ramirez excuse?
Was that? Oh, I think you're right.
Something like that.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. So, I mean, I don't know enough about it, but he's saying that that's the situation, and he's appealing. So we'll see if he wins that one. But, boy, the Giants certainly seem like a train wreck, though. I mean, Saquon Barkley, super talented, loved him last year. But now you got Daniel Jones there breathing down Eli Manning's neck. Eli Manning kind of clapped back at Odell Beckham Jr., and so did Gettleman, talking about, you know, the Giants brand. Odell Beckham Jr. said he was upholding the Giants brand. And Eli Manning said, well, I think I won a few games before he got there. And Gettleman said the other day, you know, I think when you think of the Giants, you think of like the 86 and 90 Super Bowl teams and championships before that. That's the brand. A lot of bitter folks, I think, in East Rutherford right now.
Yeah, and the talking already from Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. He had that piece in GQ this week. Like, I don't know. I'd like it if that team was you know,
I'm going to be honest. I want to see them crash and burn.
Do you? I think you're going to get your wish, Chris. They're already talking like this. It's a first-year head coach, a first-year defensive coordinator, and Steve Wilks, who got fired after a year as head coach in Arizona last year. Like, a lot of big egos in that room. They also have the Kareem Hunt situation there when he comes back from his suspension. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if that team went like 6-10. I really wouldn't. Like, that would be so Cleveland Browns.
Baker Mayfield will handle that really well when he gets all the blame. Because quarterbacks do. They get too much of the credit and too much of the blame for the team's record. And so if that team goes 6-10, how do you think Baker Mayfield will respond to that criticism?
Probably like a petulant child.
Yes.
All right. If you want to join us, we've got about 30 minutes to go here before we wrap and hand over to Christian Arcane and Matt McCarthy, who are going to be broadcasting live today as well. They're going to be over at the Scoreboard Sports Bar and Grill in Woburn. They're looking for blood donations. Some more on that coming up in just a little bit. But you want to join us, 617-779-0985. Talk about the Pats and camp so far. The Sox last night touched on Kyrie Irving as well. Whatever. We'll take your calls. Again, 617-779-0985. We'll do that right after the Sports Hub headlines here with Mike Sarge Riley.
On your radio and streaming on your phone with the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. We're live from training camp. Sponsored by Revise Energy.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub, coming to you from Gillette Stadium. Well, outside Gillette Stadium and above the Patriots practice field, as we were here for day number 3 at Patriots training camp. First padded practice so far, but they wrapped up about an hour ago. Also want to let you know that this hour of Gasper Murray is brought to you by Bernardi Auto Group. All right, to your phone calls, 617-779-0985. You want to join us, got a couple open lines. We'll go to Kyle in Auburn, who wants to talk about Michael Bennett, who was not here again today. Go ahead, Kyle.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was curious to see if Michael Bennett does retire, how much cap space would that free up? And also, who do you think they could go after if that's the case?
Chris?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have to go back and look at his contract. I can do that real quick here and sort of get back to you on that. But in terms of who's out there, you know, a guy like Mike Daniels, even though he's maybe more of an interior guy, would have been interesting. But he went
to Detroit.
The Patriots normally don't like to spend a huge amount of money for those edge rush guys. And they drafted Chase Winovich in the 3rd round. And there's been some discussion here. And I think some of the beat writers tweeted about it today that you've seen some looks that are more 3-4 oriented looks. So maybe they would just rely on the guys that they already have at that point. I mean, maybe there's somebody else. Like, I would not see them. Anybody like a Yannick Ngakoue that you have to trade for, you also have to give the guy a huge contract. Like, You're not just going to trade for him and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to play for you now. So that's the problem with those deals, whether it's like a Dee Ford, Frank Clark situation. Not only do you have to give up compensation for that player, but, you know, you have to compensate that player highly.
Yeah, it sucks to have to think about the money because, believe me, like, I've already played in my head. I'm worried about left tackle. Trent Williams has a contract squabble with the Washington Redskins. I think he's like an 8th straight time pro bowler. He's been a little bit injury prone, but the guy's a stud, one of the best left tackles in the league. Go get him. Well, then you look what the money is. It's like, oh, no, that's not going to happen. Justin in the mail truck with a Red Sox thought. Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, so I got a comment and a question for you. First, I want to say thank you for being the voice of reason with those two negative knuckleheads you work with during the afternoon show during the week.
Oh, well, thank you.
My question is with Xander Bogaerts, as we all know, he's having a career year right now. Is there a noticeable difference in his size? Did he put on weight? Is it the juiced balls? What has made him finally turn into the player that I think we all thought he was going to be 3, 4, maybe even 5 years ago?
Well, I think he saw some of this from last year in terms of his adjustment at the plate. I mean, you know, he started knocking the ball out of the park pretty quickly last year. They made some adjustments to his swing, correct? Like they.
Well, he's pulling the ball more. I think he's just sort of more aggressive. You know, that was the whole thing when Cora came in, right? It was like, we need guys to do damage, you know, be more aggressive. And I think Bogarts was one of the guys they wanted to work on with that, to attack more, to try and get extra base hits. And even Xander's talked about it. He used to be a guy that just wanted to go up the middle or sort of towards right field and just get a base hit. Now he's looking for pitches to attack, and he's trying to pull the ball. And he's always had a little loft in that swing. You know, he sort of has the one-handed finish, the old, like, you know, Walt Riniak sort of style of swing, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day, that was really, really popular, and I very poorly imitated in Little League. But, like, with situations like that, sometimes it's just the guy getting more comfortable, becoming more confident, and knowing he can, you know, do the damage. And Xander was a power guy in the minors, but also when he got to the majors after, like, his rookie year, he was out there, and it's like he's trying to sort of be like the right-handed Tony Gwynn for some reason.
They have a better lineup this year?
Oh, I mean, I think they are, especially if you get Mookie going.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, J.D. Martinez has been good. He hasn't been as good as last year, but just the way Devers has elevated his game, the way Bogarts has elevated his game, if they could ever get Benintendi going. I mean, they lead the majors in runs scored.
Yeah, and I felt like that, you know, because they pounded some of these teams. Obviously, the Yankees the last couple of nights, but even some, you know, like a lot of the bad competition, like the Orioles last Saturday, where they're putting up, what was it, 17 runs. And we've had some of those type of games, but I've heard that, and I didn't really agree with it because it's been mostly, you know, comparatively speaking, a down year for Betts to last year and same for J.D. Martinez. But look, if Betts is now going, and three home runs last night, and you know, almost had the fourth. Yeah, their lineup is much better this year because Devers and Bogarts, who are legit MVP candidates, you know, they're a deeper, much tougher lineup, I think, this year than compared to last year. Paulie in the truck with the Patriots thoughts. We'll go to you next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello, Paulie.
Yeah, just when you're just thinking it's moving, Betts, he goes ahead and hits three in a row against the Yankees last night, coming around. Maybe that makes him even better trade bait. I'm telling you, I'd offer him an extension now. And if he doesn't sign it, I'd give him the Nomar Garcia power trip and I'd trade him. But instead of building either that farm system, I get another arm in here. You know, but anyway, going to talk about football. Jim.
Yes.
First thing, I was on you said you had capers. I was on every show I could get on, as often as I could get on, just pounding the pavement for Belichick. There was only one other guy in town that was hitting it as hard as I was with Belichick. And that was a guy, an old caller by the name of Angry Bill. He used to call the old Mr. Callahan show. I haven't heard from him at all. It was funny. But I'll tell you, number two, he was the number three guy, Capers. The number two guy was the most underrated coach in the NFL history. That was Marty Schottenheimer. He brought some real tough teams to the fore. The Cleveland Browns, the Kansas City Chiefs, and the San Diego Chargers. The teams that he coached, those are some tough groups of guys. And some terrible luck in the playoffs was his undoing. Let's just say I was at that game, the divisional game against San Diego. They were the better team. They should have won that game, but the players blew it. Not Marty Schottenheimer. He was the single most underrated coach in NFL history. But I'll tell you, Chris, the most important week we came out, it was a footnote of a week, of actually a day. The most important signings was just the two footnotes. I believe they came in the same day. They definitely came in the same week. I was Shelton and Collins. That really struck. I was really worried about the middle of that defense. I forgot about Bentley coming back. We still need a down lineman, though. We're losing our Flowers. And not Simon Shelton, because he was coming up big late in the year. And then the playoffs,
he needed
those big bodies inside. Moving Malcolm Brown for this kid from the Jets, that's supposedly an upgrade, too. So now I feel real, real good about the defense. But I was over the moon that week when they brought Danny back and Collins as well.
Thanks, Paulie. Yeah. I know you're high on the Collins recently.
Yeah, I mean, let's see. I mean, you know, look, maybe it doesn't work, but I just think, again, he got his money, so he should be content. He probably realizes from a professional standpoint, it doesn't get any better than Patriot Place, and he'll be put in a position to succeed. And he was a playmaker when he was here before. I still think he has something left in the tank physically, and they got him on the cheap. And I look at all that and think, this should work out. Plus, I believe he's on a one-year deal. So if he does want to get back out on the market and cash in, then he needs to have a great season, and he needs to show that he can be a good soldier, which was sort of the issue the last time he was here when he got traded.
Yeah, I was more concerned with wheel routes. You mentioned, Marshawn Lynch. Yeah. breaking free in that Super Bowl.
How about that AFC Championship game in Denver?
Owen Daniels.
Yeah.
Bum Owen Daniels, the tight end, who's just he Jamie Collins is losing to a broken-necked Peyton Manning in that AFC Championship game in 2015. Yeah, so there's some lasting bad feelings, I think, for me with Jamie Collins. I always thought he was a hair overrated. Good.
Really? Okay.
And when that debate that year was, well, they can only keep two. We know they're not going to pay them both. Hightower or Collins? Where everyone was mostly Collins, I was always Hightower. And I feel like I've been proven right.
No, you've definitely been proven right. But you get the guy back on the cheap. He gives you some depth. He's experienced. And he was a playmaker here. And you'll take all the playmakers you can get on defense.
We got one segment to go before we hand off to Christian Arkand and Matt McCarthy, who are broadcasting live today. I want to remind you again, they're going to be over at the Scoreboard Sports Bar in Woburn. They're over there for the American Red Cross blood drive. So come out, donate, save a life. And, you know, yell at Arkand and McCarthy as well. So we'll hand off to them. But first, five questions for Chris Gasper. Got nothing to do with sports. We'll do that next as we wrap up here outside of Gillette Stadium on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the sports. Training camp is here. Our coverage is sponsored by AdCare. 1-800-ALCOHOL. On your home of the Pats, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I got five questions for Chris Gasper of the Globe. I got five questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got five questions.
Five! One, two, three, four, five.
I got five questions. I hope this segment ain't too wack.
All right, that's how we typically wrap up the show each and every week here on Gasper Murray, 98.5 The Sports, up again broadcasting live from outside Gillette Stadium above the practice field here for day three of Patriots training camp. Five questions, Chris Gasper, that have nothing to do with sports. Question number one, Chris, if you could play one instrument, what would that instrument be?
The violin.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why? Just for the classical aspect?
I just always liked the violin, and I just, I feel like it's a classy instrument, and I think it just would be a neat instrument to be able to play.
Have you ever tried? Did you play anything at any point?
I remember, like, we had music, you know, when I was back in like elementary school and stuff, and my friends would be like toting like their saxophone to school, and I was like, yeah, I don't want to do that. So I just, you know, didn't do it.
Never too late, my friend. Let me tell you, and it's now easier than ever. I'm convinced of it. I've been slowly trying to teach myself how to play piano. I bought one, like, kind of on a whim last December. Yeah, and now with, like, YouTube tutorials, like, it's easier than ever to learn pretty basically anything. You just go to YouTube, and you're maybe subscribed to someone's channel. Some are better than others. You can do it.
You can just, like, make a CD and act like you're playing the piano and just – or stream now. Well, probably streaming is a little dangerous depending on the, you know, how strong your web signal is. But just do what you did during your DJ days, right?
Just fake it.
Just fake it, man.
Record a two-hour CD and just pretend you're wiki-wiki and up there and pushing buttons. Yeah. Question number two, what's an opinion that you have, Chris Gass, that would be wildly mocked and ridiculed?
Oh, the moon landing's not real.
So you're one of those people, huh?
Yeah, I'm changing my mind. I watched some footage on it, but that's one that I've espoused in the past. It's just odd to me. I have a difficult time intellectually reconciling the fact that I have more computing power in my hand in my iPhone. I have like a million times more memory in that iPhone than they had in 1969. And it's like, now we should be going to the moon should be like, you know, me flying to Los Angeles, and we're not even close. We can't go.
You'd think. I don't know. I can understand people's points like yours that think that it might have just been, you know, a big studio production. Because especially when you see those space capsules up close from like the 60s, you're like, yeah, right. Like, it's just like a pile
of
junk.
Smithsonian. You're like, this? Yeah, this? Right. But I watched a documentary on BBC America the other day that had some footage that I hadn't seen before and some of the news stuff. And I was like, man, it would be really hard to fake this, like really hard.
I've got a bunch, but I'll tell you one that I've been harping on for a little while now, ever since I read this book about this particular doctor. And this is, I am convinced more than ever after reading this book called Dr. Feelgood that JFK was an amphetamine addict. And the reason he was killed, because he was spilling too many secrets to Marilyn Monroe. That's why actually both of them were killed. Read Dr. Feelgood about Max Jacobson.
Oh, that's interesting.
Who was shooting everyone up at that time, from Mickey Mantle to JFK to Marilyn Monroe to JFK's wife, with amphetamines. And it was just like, oh no, it's just a pep shot. That's all. What it was meth.
For real?
I'm telling you, read the book. It'll blow your
wow.
mind.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I thought it was just, what, those vitamin B shots you can get?
Yeah, basically, like, oh, yeah, oh, I got all this pep. Now yeah. I got all this pee and vinegar. No, what it was methamphetamines. That's what he was shooting everybody up with.
That's crazy.
Number three, if okay. if need be, Chris Gasper, could you change your car's oil?
No.
Yeah, me either.
Definitely not. No. I mean, I can lift the hood. I can change like the fluids, you know, like wiper fluid and whatever, but oil change? No.
Spend the $60. Next, can you give me a sentence that says I love you without saying those three words? Meaning like what's a way that you could say to your wife I love you without saying I love you? Like something you do or
I don't know. I'm lost. My wife doesn't think I'm very romantic and I think this is just proving it because I'm like, "What?"
You can have the last bite. That's what, you know, like something like that's what I would
say.
Well,
I'll tell you this. I always joke with my wife that true love is her giving me the last kosher Dodger dog at Dodger Stadium when we went to a Dodger game. I'd been raving about this kosher Dodger dog. I had one before. We get up there, right? And we go to order. I let her order first, ladies first. She orders it. Then I go to order mine. And the woman says we're all out of it. And she could just see the look on my face. So she gave me the kosher Dodger dog.
Oh, see, now that's true love. And mine,
that's true love.
Another one, too, for my is I'll move your car. We split our driveway.
Oh,
it's a
that's
giant
a good
pain
point.
In the ass.
Yeah.
But I'll move your car.
I guess mine would be I'll shovel out your car.
Finally, have you ever tried any tobacco product, Chris? Dipping, smoking, anything?
Never dipping. I think I tried cigarettes like once, but not for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't strike me as a guy. Even, like, I don't know. It would look odd seeing you hold
the candy
cigarettes
count,
yeah.
Jim? I was big into those as a child. I can't believe they could market that stuff. I love the candy cigarettes,
oh, yeah.
But actual tobacco products, I maybe once.
I've dabbled in all of it. Dip, though, I still think about. What a hideous, insidious.
Can I tell a quick dip story of my all-time? So, you know, my good buddy, Bert Breer, I don't know if he still dips, but he used to dip pretty heavily when we started out on the beat. And one time, you know, Michael Felger, who thinks everything belongs to him, came in, and he thought that this was a cup of Coke that Bert had.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Please tell me.
He drank it.
Oh, my God.
It was tremendous. One of my all-time favorite moments. Picked up the cup.
Oh, my
God. Was like, oh, I'm just going to take a sip of this because
I'm thirsty.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the best thing ever.
And it was his dip cup.
The biggest germaphobe I've ever met in my entire life. He drank someone else's
dip
spit.
Yes, he did.
Oh,
he did.
Oh,
it was tremendous.
That's the most repulsive thing you could possibly do to another person. Oh, that's amazing. Oh, you just made my weekend.
Bert used to do this like cherry dip, and he would
a cherry skull.
And he would have like a Coke, but he'd spit into the like you know, and so it was like a concoction. And man, Felger drank it. It was like
God. Oh well, with that we'll end. That's the best. That's the best story you'll ever tell. That's amazing. Oh my God,
it was great.
Well, as we wrap up, I want to thank all those who helped out today. Obviously, Howie Sylvester, Mark Capello for producing down this way. We had Kristen Sermon and Tucker Silva on the other side, back in Dorchester. Tim McCone, Mike Sarge Riley on the Hub headlines. Coming up, we have Christian Arcand and Matt McCarthy from the Sports Scoreboard Sports Bar and Grill in Woburn. You guys there?
Yeah, we're here, and I'm honestly going to vomit from that story. That's the most disgusting thing ever. I used to bartend, and people would do that. They'd do the spit cups, and they'd leave them on the bar.
Whoa.
I would ban those people from the bar. You're not allowed to come back again. That stuff is the worst. I can't believe that.
Right.
I don't even think we should do the show today, to be totally honest,
right.
Because we're never going to get better content or better story than
it's
that.
It's true.
I mean, thanks for the strong lead-in there, Gasper. That's
hey, whatever I can do. And look, I've been on the other end of that. I may or may not have once thought that old bacon grease was lemon sherbet. My mom would like freeze old. She'd save old grease and in a lemon sherbet container. So I thought it was actually the lemon sherbet. Took a big spoonful, not lemon sherbet.
You literally just made me gag. Oh my God! Well,
wow.
With that,
enjoy the blood drive, folks.
Yeah. So plug the blood drive. What do you guys have going on, and how long are you going to be there?
We're going to be here till 4 o'clock, which is as long as the blood drive's going. So if anyone's planning on coming up here, you can still donate blood for 3 more hours. We're going to do a lot of Red Sox stuff here. McCarthy's here, hardcore baseball. So we'll get into this trade deadline coming up in a couple of days, and also this amazing beatdowns the Red Sox have put on the Yankees the last 2 nights.
All right, Arcand and McCarthy coming at you, Scoreboard Sports Bar and Grill. That will do it for us, Gasper Murray. Checking out for my favorite day that we get to do the show every year from Patriots training camp. See you next week, Chris.
See you.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy, make your first bet an automatic win, with FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline MA.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.